All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, December 9th. That is
James Davis.
And I'm Doug Norrie, and we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, here to break down every single game on the NFL slate for Week 14, talk about the DFS implications that you can kind of take a look at going into this Sunday, which is pretty much a full Sunday of football. And like I said, we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com for short, and you can get a free 3-day trial to the projection system that's informing pretty much everything we talk about today on this podcast and informs the lineups that we make for both FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, that subscription, and then just $29.95 a month after that. Includes our NBA package as well. So we think that you're going to get a great deal on that one, but it's about as good as you'll get in the whole industry. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. I guess that's the word I always use, and I never mean to say surprise. But anyway, go check it out. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. All right, let's get into this week's games, buddy. We're coming off a night where if Tyreek Hill was going to – I mean, a week after we played Tyreek Hill, was there any doubt in your mind?
It feels personal almost, right?
That's what I mean.
It's like running a punt back for a touchdown, two touchdowns, like a week after we gym and all the lineups. Macklin comes back, and of course he goes off for 20 fantasy points. Not a whole lot to say other than – that's my life is a long story of being lucky and all the things that matter and unlucky and all the stuff that doesn't.
So, yeah, it really just couldn't have happened. You could have just penciled it in, bet the entire, at least my farm on it because, well, I don't own a farm, but.
Well, with your lack of farm, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, my proverbial farm. Okay, anyway.
Considerable estate. Let's get to the picks, shall we?
Chicago and Detroit starts us off here. Okay, just as one more note, if we gloss over a couple guys and reference back to yesterday's podcast, that's where we broke down a sort of position-by-position value play, sort of primer coming into this week. So I'll make mention of a guy if we did a deeper dive on certain players over the course of this game-by-game breakdown. You can go back and listen to that one, and that will give you some more insight on just like some of our top options. Chicago and Detroit start us off. Detroit comes in after a surprising victory over the Saints last week. They started at -9.5, though it went down to -7.5. Still considerable favorites here. Typically in games like this, we're looking at sort of running back play for a team that's going to maybe, you know, stands to get out ahead. I'm not sure if we can really look at that for Detroit, just in terms of how like their running game. What are some guys we're looking at for this game?
It's actually a pretty fantasy dense game, all things considered. I think, you know, we liked Barkley and we referenced Howard. We talked about him in the picks yesterday. Kind of interesting thing that's cropping up in the projection system right now where the top 4 points per dollar guys are also, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, they're four of the top 5 most expensive guys as well. So mm-hmm. I think this is just really a week to pay up at running back, and Howard certainly qualifies there. Been very reliable, and it stands to reason that they'll continue to lean on him with Matt Barkley under center. That said, you know, we like Matt Barkley too. He's just still so cheap. His rate stats are looking pretty solid. You know, it was pretty decent last week considering the bad weather, at least in terms of how things went on a per pass basis. And in a fine matchup with the league average Detroit defense, I think he could be solid here.
Yeah, and like I said, on the Detroit side of the ball, you really can't really trust anything that's coming out of their running back play. They just don't, just between Riddick and Zenner, they're just none of them are really traditional workhorse running backs by any stretch of the imagination. They're not going to get more than double digit carries really anywhere there. But we talked about a guy like Golden Tate, still very much in play here as a possession receiver. You know, the Lions, their running game is their short pass game, basically. That's sort of their plan. And, you know, as evidenced by how much they throw to Riddick out of the backfield as well. Loved Tate on this going into this week. I think you can make a case for Ebron kind of as a bounce back week. We still like Bolden if Marvin Jones weren't to play. He didn't get
as limited in practice yesterday. So, you know, he's has a better chance to suit up this Sunday, but not looking super, super likely.
Honestly, even if Jones played, I'd still probably play Tate. I think that the targets are.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Are probably just good enough at his price and on a week that's a little bit dicier at wide receiver. So, there's definitely a lot to kind of take a look at in this game. You know, I wish you could have a little more faith in the Bears' offense, especially with their wide receiver core, because I do think they're going to throw. And then we saw a game where Barkley did throw 50 passes. You just can't trust anything, really. You can't trust them on a player by player basis, really. So there's definitely some upside in the Chicago wide receiver core, but picking out who that guy is going to be is a little bit dicey. Let's go on to the Chargers and the Panthers. Panthers slight favorites here. Panthers have just been one big fantasy disappointment this season, just kind of across the board, I would say, from Cam all the way through the receiving core and Olsen and the running backs, and they really just every single week. You kind of maybe think that you can kind of trust something there, and you just simply can't. What do we think about the Panthers? At this point, are the Panthers just kind of like off the table for us from a DFS standpoint?
Yeah, they're a fantasy wasteland. You know, the relatively intriguing players like Olsen are just overpriced. Everyone else is too erratic to really want to get excited about. So there's going to be some week where Cam Newton's good again. I'm not going to be the one who plays him during that week. Right. So maybe you will. You'll get him when he has 12 carries for 100 yards and a touchdown and some reasonable passing stats. But I'm just not interested. It's just all too pricey.
Yeah, there's like there's some GPP upside on Cam, I think, just because people are probably just kind of fed up with what he hasn't really been doing this season. But other than that, you really, from a cash game perspective, can't really trust anything. On the San Diego side, you know, it's funny. We talked a lot yesterday about just the safety in guys like Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson, just in terms of how much their team uses them. Third on the list in terms of touches plus targets per game from running back is Melvin Gordon. So it's like Bell at 28.5, Johnson at 27, and then third is Gordon at 25.6. So kind of just like right below those guys. He's cheaper than them as well. Do you see that those touches per week for him, touches plus targets per week for him to be like pretty safe at this point?
Yeah, I do, from, you know, generally speaking, but it's to the point now where you really need the combination of to outstrip David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell in the top slots. You're going to need to be both a solid value the way Gordon is from week to week, and also have a good matchup. He really doesn't have that this week. Right. Carolina, eighth overall in terms of running yards allowed, and a paltry 3.8 yards per attempt on the ground. So I think that it's just not a good matchup for Gordon. And so given that there's a little savings there, but there's not much, this just isn't one of those weeks where you can play him from my perspective.
Yeah, Carolina's significantly worse against the pass, which I guess maybe puts some of the wide receivers for San Diego in play here. We talked a little bit about Tyrell Williams. There's some injury concern there with the labrum, and it bore out both in, just in narrative leading up into the game that he was injured, and then he just saw his target share significantly decrease last week. So I think you're a little worried there. You know, I think if you think that the targets have kind of shifted, Inman is actually pretty interesting here. He saw an uptick. So if you think that kind of stays the same, then Inman probably, you can get a little value on him. A guy like Gates is still coming pretty cheap in the tight end sort of like Russian roulette Karras wheel of death that you're just trying to hope for the best. But
I like that you should invented a new world called Karras wheel. That was pretty sweet.
Did I say Karras wheel?
It's like a mix between a carousel and a Ferris wheel.
Wow, that's pretty good by me. I'm going to actually trademark. Yo, TM, TM, trademark that one.
Well, so the issue here, right, with the passing situation in San Diego is even in a game where they, you know, they were up, and then, you know, it was kind of a back and forth game with Tampa Bay, but the game script didn't really call for them to shut the pass down completely. But Phillip Rivers only 26 passing attempts last game, and that's just really low. And I think it makes me feel like the folks in San Diego there just don't think they have a lot of great passing options right now. So I would approach this with a great deal of caution. You know, really any of these guys. I would love Williams if he was fully cleared on an injury perspective, but given that he hasn't been just yet, I'm pretty nervous here.
All right, the next game is Houston going into Indianapolis to face the Colts. Colts coming off a huge win against, well, huge in terms of amount of points they put up, win against the Jets last week, where Luck, I don't know if it was more about the Jets defense or more about just Luck finally getting a little bit of safety behind his offensive line, or maybe something somewhere in the middle. How do you see that performance influencing what you kind of think about the Colts as a team here? Is Andrew Luck a guy that we can play in cash games against Houston? And they're pretty significant favorites. He only threw 28 times last game, though. So I just, like, it's like hard, a little hard to tell like what the story is with Luck.
Yeah, you know, he missed the Thanksgiving game against Pittsburgh with the concussion, and then comes back and was excellent against the Jets. I mean, I think the passing attempts were down overall just because the game was such a bloodbath and they were gobbling up yards so quickly that he just didn't have time to pass more.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I was very, very encouraged. I mean, 30 fantasy points there. You know, he had an excellent stretch earlier this season, 3 weeks where he averaged 25 fantasy points, and not great matchups against Tennessee, Houston, and Chicago. So I think that Luck is a good play this week. I think particularly the pairing of him and Hilton for big tournaments is excellent. I talked about this on yesterday's podcast, and I won't belabor the point today, but Hilton, you know, he's really increased his biggest weakness, which is converting our targets into receptions. He's up, you know, like I mentioned this yesterday, but 20 more targets last season to get to the same number of receptions, 69, that he has this year. So yeah, I like both of those guys quite a bit. I think both are cash game viable. Since you can only play one quarterback, I'm not sure Luck will be my guy, but yeah, I wouldn't fault anyone for throwing him in there.
Yeah, Hilton's still a top 10 guy in targets per game this season, and that includes some games where he just kind of pulled total disappearing acts. Yep. And that's really the problem with him, is that there will be games where he just kind of disappears. But in terms of, you know, wide receiver play has been pretty all over the place, I'm still willing to go there. I'm kind of with you on Luck. Luck. I just don't know if this is the matchup that I want to go after him for, especially because he's now shown a couple weeks where the overall just volume of passing just really hasn't been there. Like the last two games he's played has been 28 and 28. So that's just a little concerning. Again, like you make a good point about they just didn't need to do it last game, but I don't know. I just need, this is the problem with quarterbacks. Like you kind of just need to hit, this is a week where you do need to hit that 40 pass attempts. And the problem is there's just very few quarterbacks you can totally trust it with because they just, I don't know, game plans kind of vary and whatever. So Luck definitely in there. I can see people playing. I'm just not sure it's the way for me to go. On the Houston side, Lamar Miller coming really cheap on DraftKings, 5,100. The Indianapolis defense, no great shakes. He was a guy early in the season we really targeted a lot just because we thought he was going to be that bell cow guy, and they've really gotten nothing out of their offensive play, which it's hard to know if like chicken or the egg, what the problem with Miller is. I suspect this more has to do with the quarterback play than it does to do with him. But man, Indy's 31st against the run this year. 5,100 for Miller on DraftKings. Do you think that there is like a floor there for him? I'm almost convinced to play him, but I don't know. I could probably be talked out of it pretty easily.
Hashtag cheap for a reason. Hashtag not even with your money.
Okay.
How about that for analysis, my friend? Yeah.
Just got the giggles out of me, but
I don't think you want to play him for his floor. That's not for me. The reason you play Miller is not to get the floor. The floor hasn't been there, frankly. I mean,
right.
You know, he's got, let's see here.
We did have 2.8 points last week, so.
But that's what I mean. That's there's a floor for you. 7 points before that. And this is not on a lack, not for lack of trying, by the way. I mean, he had 22 touches against San Diego and managed just 7 fantasy points. Like the guy's just not good, or it's just not a good situation for him. And yeah, he can also just go out. Like he will get goal line carries, for instance. He can punch it in. He scored 31 fantasy points against Indianapolis. So, you know, if you want to just stick him in there because he's really cheap and frees up some big money guys for your big tournaments, I don't mind that. But no, you're not going to play this guy in your cash games, I don't think.
And I think on the wide receiver side of it, we just bend down the Brock Osweiler path before. It's just a total mess. You just can't really trust anything that's happening there. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation with Miller on DraftKings because, like I said, he is cheap. I do like him a lot in that middle tier sort of, especially if you decide to fade one of the big running backs and you want to just get some money in elsewhere. I think you do get some upside on those prices, but yeah, you're right. Probably cash games, not the way to go. And buddy, on that note, even though this isn't a great lead-in, tell our fans here a little bit about Fantasy Factor, pal.
Ooh, Fantasy Factor. Fantasy Factor is one of our partners over at DFSR. They are a relatively new DFS site, trying to compete with FanKings and DraftDuel, whatever those other big sites are called. they're a really cool kind of niche site where you can go and play some smaller contests against, you know, not all pros putting in 100 lineups. They've actually been offering some really cool free rolls for our users recently where we had a $20 free roll and a $50 free roll for both NBA and NFL. So I'm not sure if they're going to run one for us this weekend. I haven't gotten an email from Ash there over at Fantasy Factor, but if they do, you'll read about it on the site. We'll tweet it out and whatnot. But it's been really fun. You know, we've been able to compete against our users, and they've been happy with it too. You know, Fantasy Factor offers no strings attached bonuses to on their deposits. I think right now you can just go deposit and get $5 to play with straight away. So use promo code DFSR. You get your $5 bonus. You can put it right into play. If you win, great. Keep the money or reinvest it. And if not, no problem. It was on them. So it's fantasyfactor.com, promo code DFSR, or you can check back on our site and check out the next time they run a free roll with us.
Yeah, check them out. The banner is posted in the podcast link. So go check them out. We really love those guys over there. Let's talk next game, which actually has fantasy implications, which is amazing, is the Browns and the Bengals. The Browns are obviously a total disaster, so no reason to really kind of belabor the disaster point on them. They are going to get Robert Griffin III is going to be back under center this week. Not really sure that matters at all for anybody on that team. I mean, he really didn't play at all at the beginning of the year. Not that great anyway. The rest of the team stinks. But on the Bengals side, you know, Andy Dalton is a guy we talked a lot about yesterday. I think he's probably cash game viable, mostly because the Browns are so bad. But what about like a guy like, so anyway, if you want the Andy Dalton analysis, go back to the last podcast and we like him a lot there. But what about like a guy like Jeremy Hill? He saw a ton of carries last week. They kind of did, you know, they gave it to Rex Burkhead a little bit. And those were the two guys that mostly carried the load. But if you think that the Bengals get up early, and you think they're going to kind of lean on Jeremy Hill? Like, do you think has like 20 touch kind of upside here? Maybe more if the game script like kind of favors the way it's going for him?
Well, there's no question he has 20 touch upside. The question is, what upside does that even really provide for you? I mean, the Bengals have been horrendous at running the ball recently. Yeah, tough matchups for sure, but 1.4 yards per carry against Philly is a crime against humanity. 1.8 yards per carry against Baltimore, and that's over 35 carries total between those teams. There's only been one game this season, or I'm sorry, two games where he's topped 4 yards per carry this year. And one of those was against Cleveland, where he had 9 carries for 168 yards and a touchdown. So I guess it's kind of anybody's guess where the touches are going to go in Cincinnati. If you want to speculate on one for a big tournament, I guess I can't blame you. But hopefully you just are putting in a lot of entries, and that's not one of your main big sneaky plays or anything.
Yeah, I will say, like, you know, Philly's a top 10 defense against the run. Baltimore's number one this year. So those two, the three games before that against Buffalo, he did average around 4 yards per carry. And I think that, and again, Cleveland's like 31st against the run or something like that. Like, you're getting a significant advantage compared to those two previous games. I don't think Hill's any great running back by any means, obviously, but there are very few guys that you can maybe take a look at and say, okay, this guy could get 20 to 25 carries in the right kind of game. Maybe 25 is too high. 20 to 23 carries in the right kind of game. And it's expensive, but it definitely is a tournament play for me, especially if you don't want to go like the Dalton route, or you just think the game gets out of hand early. Again, it's hard for me to consider playing him over, and not over, but like swapping him in for a guy like Johnson or Bell, obviously. But I think there is some tournament upside, especially if he can punch the ball in. What about the Cincinnati wide receiver core against the Browns pass defense that ranks 31st in the league?
Yeah, sure. I think I like Tyler Boyd. I mean, it looks like Adrian Green's going to miss once again. Boyd jumped up to, well, it was only 14% target share against the Eagles, but, you know, kind of maintained his production. He didn't punch anything in the end zone, and that's a little bit troubling. And perhaps more troubling for me, actually, in the Philly game was the lack of snaps, 42 snaps just to overall, because the game script got out of hand.
Yeah.
So the Bengals, I think, are showing us that if they do jump out to a huge lead, that they will get away from, you know, more experimental or risky plays like passing to Tyler Boyd or Tyler Eifert. But I just realized they're the Tyler brothers. Who knew that?
No relation.
But that being said, I think the upside is very real. And I think if you take last week as sort of Boyd's floor, which is the way I see it, then there's a lot to like about this situation. You know, one of the things I think people overrate in general is blowout potential. It's just pretty hard to blow a team out to the point where you're just taking your starters out. You know, Vegas sees this as a game that's not going to be particularly close, but it's not like they're not penciling it in for a 15-point spread, right? It's a 5.5-point spread.
Yeah, that's really not that much.
No, it's not at all. Right. And so, picturing Boyd or any of these guys dramatically changing their usage based on the game script, you're disagreeing with billions of dollars in Las Vegas. So I do not disagree with them on this instance. I think it will be a somewhat of a close game, and I think Boyd gets there.
We mentioned yesterday with the Steelers who faced the Bills this week, Le'Veon Bell just being in that elite class along with David Johnson in just terms of touches. He leads the NFL so far this year in per game targets plus touches. I think he's right around 30, which is just a totally crazy number. We talked
35 last week against the Giants.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no reason to think that that's going to kind of disappear anytime soon. He's the guy that they need to play. He's, once again, him and David Johnson are good running backs plus decent wide receivers kind of wrapped into one package. So Bell, as a guy that I'll probably have in every cash game lineup, I suspect he's chalk along with Johnson this week. After him, though, Antonio Brown, you know, Antonio Brown is just not the elite target guy he used to be. I don't really know other way to put it. They're still throwing to him. I guess, okay, let me rephrase. He's elite in terms of this season, like in terms of like NFL writ large this season. He's not elite in terms of like what his price is and what he's been in the past, right? So like at what point is like, are these receivers just kind of too expensive? I mean, he's averaged 10.5 targets per game this year. I know a couple of those games had Landry Jones, so it's a little thrown off. But even in previous weeks, he's not getting 14 targets a game anymore. What do we do with a guy like Brown?
Well, yeah, and I think this is always the great math that you have to do between running backs and wide receivers, right? Because normally the thing with wide receivers is they do so much more with their touches than running backs do that you can't compare them apples to apples. But with the emergence of these super backs like Johnson and Bell that, you know, are, but like I said yesterday, kind of like a $7,000 running back and a $6,000 wide receiver.
Right.
When you combine those two, it just yields better results, generally speaking, to go in that direction. Because again, a misunderstood fantasy concept is thinking that you're only deciding between guys at the same position, but you're also deciding among guys at the same price point. So in basketball, it might be between Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook, and really deciding between those two big money guys influences the rest of your lineup really dramatically because it really limits the other options you have. Football's the same way. Like if you spend up at $8,800 for Antonio Brown, you're not going to get both of the expensive running backs, or you're not going to get both of them certainly and a reasonable quarterback. So I think Brown at this point, you know, just let's see here, 19 receptions in the last 3 weeks in some reasonable matchups with Cleveland, Indy, and the Giants. I don't think you can look at him as a guy who is a slam dunk 20 fantasy point guy a game anymore. And if he's not going to be that guy, this might just be too expensive.
On the other side of the ball, you know, a guy like, it's funny, but trying to get a guy in the right matchup. Shady McCoy has been awesome since returning from injury over the last couple weeks. And by awesome, I mean his yards per carry just kind of continue this trend. This guy just is a great yards per carry guy.
Yeah, sure what's going on there this season. It's insane.
So the last game was 17 for 130, averaged 7.6 yards a carry. The game before that, 19 for 103, 5.4. And then the game before that against Cincy, he was on the pace for 6.6 and got hurt. What do you do with a guy like him? He will also catch balls out of the backfield as well. And sort of so he can stand to be down a little bit in terms of just like staying on the field. How do you see McCoy as like, do you see them like at an upside tournament play on a guy like him if you were to pivot away from some of those big boys?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to phrase McCoy's role right now. You know, our model and models in general are going to have a tough time with outlier guys like McCoy because generally speaking, people just don't put up this kind of yards per carry. It's right. Just really, really, really hard to average 5+ even yards per carry in the NFL, much less what McCoy has done in some weeks. And Pittsburgh represents a really interesting matchup for him because the thing about Pittsburgh actually is that they've been below league average in terms of yards per attempt allowed per game, but well above the curve when it comes to yards per game allowed, and that's just because their offense is so excellent. And so, you know, they've allowed the 6th fewest rushing yards per game this season. So this is going to be one that a lot of models are just going to have a tough time wrapping their minds around and spitting out anything close to a reasonable or safe projection on him. So all that being said, you know, our model doesn't love him this week, I think, for a lot of those factors. But I mean, the evidence is there that he has explosive upside, and he's certainly option one in the red zone. So yeah, I definitely don't mind him in a big tournament context.
If you think they're playing from behind, anything in the Buffalo passing game? Like,
No.
Okay. Moving on. Cardinals and Dolphins. We, again, talked a ton about David Johnson going into this week. We did a lengthy thing already on this podcast and yesterday's podcast. So David Johnson, cash gameplay, lock him up in all of our lineups this week. Moving on from him. After him, though, the Dolphins side of the ball – man, they actually started as a favorite in this game at home, and then that line shifted 4.5 points pretty freaking quickly. Yeah, it was everyone just kind of ran to the bookmaker, just sprinted down to it, I guess.
Just want to make sure this wasn't a typo. We saw this online. It's not a typo. 50,000.
Right. Right. I mean, that thing moved pretty dramatically. So I don't know if you think that the Dolphins are going to be playing from behind. Are we like anything in the pass game? Also, on the Cardinals side of the ball, Larry Fitzgerald has been a pretty steady target guy over the course of the season. The possession nature of what he does, he actually is fourth overall in targets per game this season at 10.
So 6,800 at FanDuel. I mean, they're giving him away.
Right, exactly. It's Evans, Brown, Beckham, and then Fitzgerald in terms of targets per game. Now, his targets are a little different than those other guys because he doesn't have necessarily the explosive, sort of downfield upside that you would want. But do you see his price as maybe being in that cash game territory?
Oh, yeah. I think Fitzgerald definitely falls in that cash game territory for me. I do think that, you know, it's a little troubling that he hasn't been involved in the red zone game recently, but football is always tricky because it's such small sample sizes that we're working with that it's hard to really glean too much information because typically possession guys like him actually do quite well in the red zone. So, it's been a David Johnson show left, right, and center recently. If that changes and he even gets like a slight uptick in touchdown scoring, then he's just a tremendous value. And I think even as it stands, particularly on a site like DraftKings, where, you know, you can get him for 10 receptions in a game, like, man, that just pays for itself. So I do like Fitzgerald, even if I'm not super, super excited about his big tournament prospects.
For what it's worth, and maybe it's not worth much, but Miami's been horrendous against wide receivers sort of like in the middle and in the slot this year. Basically one of the worst in the league. So that is where Fitzgerald sort of operates in and around that territory. Those numbers are a little bit weird to sort of evaluate on a player-by-player basis.
Yeah, it's so tough to get on it.
Exactly.
The schedule and all that stuff.
Right. So it's like, I mean, but like the numbers for Miami are just, are really just kind of horrifically bad. So if it, there is a chance that the Fitzgerald is just in a good sort of just overall scheme matchup plus opportunity here. The rest of the that wide receiver core for Arizona, tough to trust. I guess you could take a shot on, you think Jermaine Gresham is going to get maybe just kind of a luck box touchdown. That's sort of been his his profile, but, and just because we need to get away from tight end cheaply. And then on the Dolphins side of the ball, anything to really consider here, considering they're maybe playing from behind against a decent defense?
Yeah, I don't think so, unfortunately. I mean, I think Jay Ajayi, things were looking pretty good for him, and they've tailed off pretty dramatically. Again, you know, one really tough matchup with Baltimore, but, you know, even in a great matchup against San Francisco and a good matchup against Los Angeles, he just didn't get home. So I think we've sort of moved past Jay Ajayi turning into the new Lamar Miller there. The wide receivers, the production's been too spread out to really get too excited about anything. I think that Jarvis Landry, you know, given how cheap he is now, he's down to 6,111 receptions against Baltimore. You know, he could be turning a corner there, production perspective. You know, he was certainly there earlier in the season. Maybe he's a guy to look at, but I don't think you look at anyone else here.
All right, Denver and Tennessee, there's no line right now. Well, there's an over-under, but no line. I'm not exactly – I guess they're maybe waiting for the quarterback to be announced.
Like, yeah, Simeon. It's going to be Lynch or Simeon.
Yes, I mean, so funny. It's like, wow, it's going to be Paxton Lynch or Trevor Siemian. You know, if you're a Bronco fan, you just slap your head kind of. The you know, on the Titans side of the ball, this is a tough defensive matchup, even for the Broncos' offensive sort of issues. DeMarco Murray is a guy that is in that sort of elite touch range that we were talking about with guys like
Melvin Gordon. Yeah, he's a tier B, sure.
Yeah, but I just don't know if the matchup here is something I want to get really, I want to target too much. Now, Denver has been not great against the run this year. They rank 26th against the run. They're first against the pass in terms of DVOA. Does the fact that there's such a chasm between how good they are against one thing and bad they are against the other, does it put Murray in play at all for you?
This is a chasm, by the way, and totally agree. Yeah, I think it does. I mean, again, I'm not going to play him for cash games just because I don't know why you would want to play a worse version of the big name guys for not a huge, huge savings. But for, you know, upside perspective, or, you know, if you really just get pressed for salary, like, you know, I really haven't done tons of huge crunching just yet for this slate, then maybe you wind up playing him. I do think the Denver matchup is overrated enough, like in terms of how bad it is, that he'll be much lower owned in big tournaments than we would see normally. Like if it was just, you know, like who are Denver's contemporaries down at the bottom of that basement? Like if he were facing Miami or something on these prices, he would have a much higher tournament upside in most people's minds than against Denver. So yeah, I think you can get good separation. I think the upside's there. Definitive goal line back. And I think that the Titans will be very cautious with Mariota because we've seen that he is not anything close to matchup proof. When the matchup is bad, he can just get flustered and, you know, kind of just self-combust. So I do like Murray here.
You have an interesting there's an interesting opportunity in tournaments this week, I think, with the so much of the sort of DFS speak revolves around Johnson and Bell, and they will be so highly owned, and that's correct in general, right? Like those guys are just the best, but there are ways to pivot, and if you think those guys are going to be 40 to 50% owned in tournaments, which is totally within reasonable expectations considering how good they are, pivoting to guys like Murray and Gordon, who also just have sort of elite touch levels that are for a little bit cheaper, and then being able to also simultaneously pivot some of the Bell and Johnson's like team production. Like if you go to Antonio Brown and Larry Fitzgerald, like and think that those are the guys that just see like sort of an uptick at the expense of those other guys, I think there's an interesting tournament option that you can kind of fade those two guys with a reasonable expectation. I wouldn't do it in cash games by any means, but I do think there are some decent pivots this week because those guys are just going to be so highly owned.
Yeah, I think that's probably spot on. I think actually in that same vein, there's perhaps a little bit of upside to be had on the Denver receiving core.
Yep.
Like just, again, if you just want to throw a dart at the wall and hope it sticks, particularly Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, he was not good overall against Jacksonville last week, but he did garner 20% of the targets in that game. And, you know, he is used in the red zone. He can catch and run with the ball. He has terrible quarterbacks also, but he's just 5,900. So, and kind of like the Golden Tate from last week, like the guy under 6,000 that has an excellent chance to just return value, I think he's in the conversation.
All right, next game on the list is the Redskins and the Eagles. I think Jordan Reed is going to play this week. It looks like signs are pointing that he's going to play, though some people are reporting that he was in pain, so it's a little tough to figure out what exactly is going on there. The Redskins have been an interesting team in the terms that they do kind of spread the ball around a lot, and that can make sort of everyone kind of fall into this middle ground where you just don't really want to play any of them. What do you think about the Redskins side of the ball, and then are we at all on the Eagles?
Well, there, unfortunately, I don't think is a ton to love on the Redskins side of the ball. Rob Kelly's a guy who should be on your radar for big tournaments just because, you know, he did have the 3-touchdown game against Green Bay a couple weeks ago. But the Redskins seem to be moving away from the run, even in close games, or perhaps especially in close games. And that's pretty troubling here. Vegas sees this as a tight one. And even if the Redskins get the lead, I don't think they're going to, like, get up huge and just try to ground and pound. But still, you know, starting number one back, goal line option at 5,900 is at least a prospect that should be, you know, something you know about. On the Eagles side of the ball, you know, we talked about it yesterday, but Zach Ertz is looking pretty good. I mean, he had a huge target share last week, 21.4%. Obviously, he had the touchdown, and I think he'll be highly owned just because tight end is so bad. So I don't know if he's a slam dunk, like you need to play him in all your big tournaments or else you're going to lose automatically, but I think he's going to be the top cash game play by a mile.
I think I'm with you on Ertz. And again, this just is the Karras wheel of tight ends, right?
Karras wheel, yeah.
Trademark. Eagles are just a tough team. The running back situation is just kind of all over the map. You can't trust them on a week-to-week basis in terms of what they're doing on that side. This whole game just kind of falls into sort of weird middle ground for me. I'm simultaneously like some guys and kind of just can't really talk myself all the way into it, though I could see someone here having a huge game. I just trying to figure out who it's going to be is a little bit dicey. Vikings go into Jacksonville to take on the Jaguars. We had Stephon Diggs came back last week, saw some targets. He was a guy that was getting into that elite target zone on a week-to-week basis leading into the injury, and then he kind of was injured. But he saw the weeks of 13, 14, and 15 targets. Then the last two, a tough matchup against Patrick Peterson in Arizona, and then not a great matchup against Dallas either, where he saw 7 and 8 targets. Can you see a situation where he gets back to that, I don't know, like that low teens targets? Because there aren't many receivers in the league that were able to put up those kind of numbers. 2 weeks removed from it, but maybe that was a matchup thing?
Yeah, I kind of love Diggs this week, actually. He, you know, like you mentioned, the back-to-back teens targets, you know, struggled with the injury a little bit, but, you know, converting a huge percentage of his targets in those two games against Arizona and Dallas, you know, 14 for 15, that's really quite good. And while the overall yards per target haven't quite been the same, he's definitely flashed, you know, big run upside in the past. So I do kind of like him going forward. I mean, the one thing that you'd look at and feel concerned about with those big games is they lost all those games. So it's not like it was exactly working for Minnesota to pound the ball to him. And that might be more of a thing that they do, you know, when behind and when the game is kind of spiraling out of control. But, you know, if you assume that this game will not do that, then maybe he doesn't have quite the upside he did earlier on. But I think that it will continue to climb. It's not like I don't think Adam Thielen has Wally Pipped him or anything. So I think he's a fairly safe target in all formats, really.
Great Wally Pipp reference. I guess where we struggle here, this is a situation where we kind of say to ourselves, like, because our system is built mostly on, or significantly on, opportunity, right? And as most systems,
yeah, the really baseline number of statistics that we formulate before the season, and then right. You know, how their opportunity shifts throughout the week based on, you know, matchup and what they've been doing.
And Diggs is one of those kind of cases where it's a little hard to tell, right? Because you want to look at, like, he went through stretch of 7, 7, and 5 targets. Then he had a crazy amount of targets, and then he kind of dips back down, and you just kind of get caught wondering which is the real guy and which is matchup and what, you know, what was scheme and what was kind of these things. And Jacksonville is not a pushover defense by any means. Top 10 in DVOA this season, top 10 against the pass. So they are not just like the pushover Jags that we saw last year that you could just kind of target receivers and quarterbacks all day long and profit. I do think Diggs flies under the radar here because people look at that recent game log and get a little concerned about the targets, but I'm talking myself slowly into him, and I think that this is a guy that I'll probably end up doing a slightly deeper dive on just to make sure all of our inputs are correct. Outside of him in this game, I mean, can you really, on the Minnesota side of the ball, you really can't trust the running back situation.
No.
Jacksonville is facing a very tough Minnesota defense, and they're kind of just a mess anyway. Anything else to even think about here?
Yeah, Kyle Rudolph is another guy in the tight end, in a really, really bad tight end position that provides more safety than most guys do. You know, you're paying up a little bit, $5,500 for him compared to what he's done recently. But, you know, the upside's there. He is a reasonable red zone target. He'll also disappear completely sometimes and get like one target. So this is just the state of the modern NFL at the tight end position. But again, a guy who you should know about.
Moving into the Jets and the Niners, Bryce Petty, Colin Kaepernick, you know, we're going to, this is the kind of thing that when we get late in season NFL, we get matchups like this that you can kind of X off the docket of games to watch and just move on to another game. But for DFS implications, Petty is going to get the start for the Jets. I don't know if you can trust him. He threw a ton of passes, couldn't complete any of them last time against the Colts. And obviously Kaepernick got benched last week. It was a snow game. It was probably an outlier game in terms of just like what we can reasonably expect. He was a guy that had been amazing going into last week and then, I don't know, just ended up sitting. Where do we think about sort of the cheap quarterback? Well, Kaepernick's not cheap, but a cheap quarterback playing Petty possibly against a really bad Niners defense. And Kaepernick, any chance of him bouncing back sort of into that elite? Because he was in an elite fantasy class 2 weeks ago and wasn't there last week. But, you know, what do we think about the quarterback play here?
Yeah, Kaepernick's an upside-only play for sure. You know, again, he was basically a running back and a quarterback in that game against Miami. And so just knowing that he can score 34 fantasy points in a game and had 3 weeks before that with 20 or more means that there's a good chance he's just simply worth more than this. The Niners are so erratic, though, and, you know, kind of temperamental. I couldn't believe they benched him. He was not having a good game, but like, what are they playing for? Like, right. I don't really understand it. He's the only exciting thing about the team right now. So unfortunately, I think that means I'm not willing to invest in him and kind of trust that, but I could see a good case for people doing so. Actually, I think one sort of interesting underlying theme in this game might be Matt Forte in terms of just a big, you know, just a big gamble from a tournament perspective, but San Francisco has been so otherworldly bad against the run this season. Like, just to be clear, they've allowed 2,032 rushing yards. The next highest is Cleveland at 1,687. And that's just like a pretty huge gap. Essentially, they're on pace to be like as though peak Eric Dickerson was rushing against them every single game.
Right.
That's pretty bad. They also are worse than the NFL at 4.9 yards per carry allowed too. So given that the Jets quarterback situation is so bad right now, and the fact that they've just gotten complete trains run on them week after week after week,
right,
I think this is a chance for them to kind of right the ship. And we've seen it. Like, they're not, it's not that they're averse to leaning on Matt Forte when things are breaking right for them. It's just that things never break right for them. So I can see them harkening back to like the game against Cleveland where Forte had 25 carries. The problem with Forte for cash games is like, you're just not getting away with anything at him at 7,700. Like, he's just a straight gamble, but I would not be shocked at all if he were among the very, very elite running backs in terms of overall production at the end of the week.
For sure. If you think he gets in that 25, I mean, and he has had upwards of 30 carries, that you're right. The defense is just so bad on that, on the other side of the ball. Seattle heads into Green Bay this week. We talked a little bit about Aaron Rodgers yesterday in terms of we think that he might be sort of go under-owned, even in a tougher matchup against Seattle. We kind of like some of the upside there. Same with Jordy Nelson, more tournament plays for us. But I think people, our system kind of is liking what it sees there, even though people might be, you know, talked out of it because of the Seattle defense. On the Seattle side of the ball, guys like Russell Wilson, Thomas Rawls, the matchup's okay against Green Bay here. It's not great. Like, Green Bay has been, they've been very good against the run this year, 7th, but worse against the pass, 22nd. Because of that, do you see the Seattle kind of go more to the air this year to exploit a poor Packer secondary?
Yeah, they certainly could. I think, you know, Doug Baldwin's a guy, obviously, who has big time upside just because he's the primary option down in the red zone. I don't really love it, if I'm being totally honest with you. I mean, I could see a case for Russell Wilson, but given the guy just on the other bench across the sideline at Aaron Rodgers is this almost the same exact price. And granted, he has a worse matchup, but he's just such a better player from a fantasy perspective. It's hard for me, you know, again, just given that it's so scarce and you only need to play one guy at the quarterback position, I just can't imagine that Russell Wilson will be the guy who I wind up playing this week. But I mean, it's a fine matchup. It's just a question of what your goals are.
Yeah, this game is interesting. I think for tournaments, I'm going to throw some of these Green Bay guys in there because I do think that especially if they're playing catch up or if maybe I think our system is just kind of drawing out a little bit more Green Bay value than the rest of the industry. And in those situations, I'm willing to trust it in terms of tournament, putting some tournaments
together. Well, they're
just
cheap, right? I mean, those guys like Jordy Nelson, I was looking at him. So Jordy Nelson has played 12 games this season. And he is 6 overall in targets, right?
Right.
And, you know, he's a very good yards per catch guy. He's got 10 touchdowns on the back of just being one of the most elite red zone options in the NFL right now. And so given that Richard Sherman, from my estimation, has lost a step or two, I think that Nelson is a tremendous value at 7,100. And I'll go a step further. I think he could be a good cash game play too.
Yeah, I think we will be way contrarian in that when it's all said and done. But again,
I can't wait, baby. Bring it on.
I don't totally mind it, really. Falcons go into LA to face Jeff Fisher, Jeff Fisher led Rams. It's so funny to see like a bad coach just be like in the public sort of spotlight this week, just for all the things that have gone wrong. He signs an extension. He can't find his challenge flag. There's news that the GM and him hate each other. It's just like a total mess in LA. It's hard to target Falcon guys against the Rams. The Rams aren't a good team, but they play so slow that the other teams just have trouble getting volume in there. That being said, Mohamed Sanu is looking maybe doubtful to play this week. Do you think that boosts Taylor Gabriel into sort of that cash game play? He's a guy that's seen the targets uptick over the short term. He's had some electric games, maybe a little bit lucky in terms of touchdowns. But what do you think of Gabriel with the idea that Sanu sits this week?
Yeah, I mean, Gabriel, I don't know. He's like the exact guy that I personally never want to play because right. He's just so all over the place. But I think a lack of Sanu would actually raise my estimation of him to some degree. It's kind of interesting with him, actually, because the snaps really haven't been there when he's actually been on the field. You know, he's been in the 14 to 15 to up to 21% target share, and that's really good. I mean, that's, you know, I think a lot of people just look at the overall targets and ignore the opportunity on the field. If he's really going to go out there and get Mohamed Sanu level snaps, I think we could definitely see him slide into being, you know, just an excellent, excellent cash game play at these prices.
And that's the overall question with scheme. That's just sometimes hard to know, right? Because if a guy is just sort of like that slot third down receiver, which it appears Gabriel is, like, or like, you know, sort of passing sets receiver, not every down guy, sometimes teams aren't willing to pivot that role and they'll just slot someone into Sanu's role that's just different because they like what they're getting from Gabriel. And that's where it's a little hard to
sometimes
change
of pace guy 100%. Well, and the other thing with Gabriel, it's so hard to estimate too, is he's averaging a touchdown a week over the last 5 weeks. Like those can just disappear on you, and then you're left with a guy who gets 54 yards on six catches. Like, that's not anything to write home about. So I don't know, it's a scary one for me. I would definitely need definitive, like, none of this game time decision stuff given this is a 4 o'clock game. But yeah, I could see it making all the other pieces work, which in and of itself might make it worth it.
And in the old not all touchdowns are created equally camp, his touchdowns have been more of the catch and run variety, which are very much more difficult to replicate than it is just being passed on fade routes or like inside routes.
The athleticism differences in these guys is not to where you can just catch the ball and reliably just be like sprinting past everyone and scoring touchdowns. Like, that's not a thing.
All right, the next game actually has a lot of fantasy implications. It's the Saints going to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay actually favored in this one. Breeze coming off a game, like we said earlier in the podcast, and last podcast and the podcast before, where he just underperformed his expectation last week against the Lions. Mm-hmm. He's on the road this week against the Tampa Bay defense. It's, you know, what kind of whatever. They're still expected to put up points. It's interesting that Tampa Bay is at 27 implied points, which is, I think, probably the highest for them all season. Where do you see a guy like Jameis? I had boosted his projection just a little bit in terms of overall passes attempts this week. He's an interesting guy. The Saints are really still pretty bad on the defensive side of the ball, especially against the pass. They rank 26th. Is Jameis a guy that we could make a cash game case for this week against the Saints?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird on him because the volume has been down a little bit this, like, very recently. So you don't totally know what to make of that. I mean, one of those games was against Seattle, and, you know, it's to be expected that maybe the volume is down there a little bit. But the completion percentage has been excellent on him. That was kind of a knock on him in the past, is he's just kind of winging the ball downfield to Mike Evans and closing his eyes and hoping for the best. And he really hasn't been doing that. And I actually think he's running a little bit bad in terms of interceptions over the last four games, too. So, you know, it's a good matchup with the Saints. It should be a fast-paced game. They should have incentive to keep the numbers keep ticking up. So I think he's absolutely a cash game consideration.
Hey, tell everyone about No Halftime, and I'm going to set up a No Halftime challenge for you.
Yeah, No Halftime is one of our sponsors and a terrific new app for daily fantasy football where you can go there, sign up, using promo code DFSR25, get a $25 bonus that you can put into play. And it's really neat, actually, because what you do is you pick a player, any player, and then you issue a challenge to the world that player is going to be better than some other player. So you might say Jameis Winston versus Aaron Rodgers, for instance, and then somebody out there can decide if they think Rodgers is going to be better. They'll accept the challenge, winner take all, whatever money you want to put in. And if no one wants to accept it, no problem. You just get your money back. So you can offer really lopsided challenges like Jameis Winston versus Matt Barkley or whatever. You can offer as many as you want, or you can go comb other people's challenges. You know, we see challenges in there every week that are excellent value, and I've been really satisfied with my No Halftime experience. So that's nohalftime.com, promo code DFSR25, and they'll get you started.
Buddy, boy, you read my mind. That was my No Halftime challenge, was Jameis versus Aaron Rodgers. If you had to throw that one out, was that one you would be willing to throw out there? And or if you saw it, would you be able to take it and take one side of it?
No, I wouldn't. It's not one, because I just think they're bigger edges and I don't have infinite money. But I do think I would take Rodgers personally. I know they're essentially a tie in our system right now. Winston's favored by 0.1 points, but I'd take Rodgers just because I think that I just think it's safer. I think people overrate the Seattle defense, and I think Rodgers is going to be great.
I'll give you another one. What about a guy like Mike Evans versus Julio Jones?
Ooh, well, this is not one I'm prepared to jump into right off the cuff, but I'll pull it up for a second here. Mike Evans versus Julio Jones. You picked another one that's really close, huh? I'll take Mike Evans in this situation, and I'll go with the system here. I'm a little bit concerned about Jones's sort of up and down targets. Evans continues to get the targets, and his upside's just through the roof, so I like him better. Just on an overall point score basis, even if I like Jones's price a little bit better.
On the New Orleans side, do you see is there a place to get separation on a guy like Breeze? He's coming off, obviously, a terrible week where everyone played him. Well, not everyone, but he was like 40% cash game starter.
43%, I think, yeah.
Right. And when you're above 40%, you know, getting close to the majority of people playing DFS played him last week and were disappointed by him. And we know DFS players are nothing if not fickle with their short-term memory. And so do you think against, you know, Tampa Bay has been pretty good against the pass, but this is still Breeze. I know he's playing on the road. Do you think we can get separation on him just because people will not want to go back to the well after kind of getting burned by him last week?
I do think we can get a little separation, and separation not something you necessarily want for your big tournaments, but for your cash game purposes, sure. Tampa Bay, you know, we have them as actually like roughly a league average matchup, and, you know, Breeze is something way more than a league average quarterback, given that you're getting him for $600 cheaper than you got him for last week, and essentially the same matchup with Detroit. He's a better value this week than he was last week. Last week is just basically meaningless as far as our projection system is concerned. He had 326 yards, which was actually his highest total since October 23rd. It's just that some balls land in other people's hands instead of his own guy's hands. The 70% completion rate leads me to believe that it was nothing more than a little bit of bad luck, and I like him quite a bit here.
If you had one last no halftime, if you had to do him or Jameis, who would you do?
Oh, I do Jameis just because the New Orleans matchup is just so transcendent. You know, they've allowed 7.8 yards per attempt in the air this season, and 3,300 yards overall, which is the most. And it's just such a good matchup, particularly because they play so fast. It leads to more possessions for their opponents, and you know, they typically can jump out to leads, and that also bodes well for Jameis too.
And then there are some notes about Doug Martin and the Tampa Bay running game about whether they're going to want to lean on him this game or maybe go more to a running back by committee. Whenever you hear things like that, I get a little scared about just what a guy's role is going to be. Again, I'm not sure. Sometimes you don't know if that's just the coach speak to get a guy motivated or if they actually believe it. So I don't necessarily totally believe that they're just going to go running back by committee on Martin. But anytime that you just hear any concern, you do have to probably lower some expectations on a guy who...
Yeah, he's already kind of not a guy for me anyway. So it's not like I take that news as definitive proof that I shouldn't play him this week.
The Sunday night game is the Cowboys go into New York New Jersey to face the New York Giants. I think people see Ezekiel Elliott. Like, I think there's a mistake that people make that they kind of put Elliott in that same tier as David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. And I just don't know if that's like Dallas hype or if it's the fact that like he just has been great, like on a yards per carry basis, but he's not like he's three total touches and looks away from those guys. Do you think people make a mistake when they put Elliott in that same class?
I do, only because he's not there in the passing game nearly to the same degree. The most receptions he's had in a game is 4. And if you take away the one random game where he had 95 yards receiving on 2 catches, which I don't think you can count on him for, you know, he's not even top 30, let's see, well, 52 passing yards, but 37, 30, 20, you know, that's more in the range that he tends to be in. So he's just not there on that end. It's not to say Ezekiel's not great. Like, if he gets the right matchup on a week-to-week basis, he'll be in the lineups. It's just that with Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson performing at a totally different level, he's just right there in the kind of 1B category with guys like LeSean McCoy, DeMarco Murray, you know, the guys who are just kind of Melvin Gordon, outside-looking-in guys.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be going to him over these other plays that we talked about. Again, the touches are close to elite, so don't get me wrong, but he's also priced up in that upper tier, and I just don't think you get enough out of him on a week-to-week basis. I mean, his price is, it's 500 and 1,200 less, respectively, than Bell and Johnson, so I guess you are getting some savings there. Giants defense has been decent this year, all things considered. They're not playing at an extremely fast pace, and that's... it's a little bit troubling for a team. I mean, they've been Giants are actually 7th in the league in DVOA. I didn't actually realize they were that high. So not a great matchup. On the other side, can you go to a guy like Beckham in a primetime game here? I don't know. That doesn't influence our system at all, though. I know people tend to think that, like, you know, some of these guys kind of step up in big performances or whatever. Is Beckham a guy you're all interested in?
A little bit, but only just if I'm trying to go contrarian in a big tournament. I'm not really interested in going here just because, again, this is not what I want to be doing for $8,500. Like, a guy who could score 15 points one week, 25, 7, 20, 7, right. 18. Like, that's just not what I want when I have options like Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson at my fingertips.
And finally, the Monday night game, which always has less implications just in DFS in general because it's not on that those main slate of just kind of big Sunday tournaments and big Sunday buy-ins, is the Ravens go into New England to face the Patriots. Patriots, again, big favorites here, no real surprise. -7, which is that's a territory we like to start targeting running backs in because, you know, they're just going to sort of impound, ground and pound, get out of the game. But Baltimore's a really good defense, and I'm just not sure this is a place we want to target a guy like Blunt. Baltimore on the season is, yeah, number 2 overall in DVOA, first overall against the run. What do you see? Mm-hmm. Where do you see sort of the value lying on the Patriots side of things here?
Yeah, the Edelman is the first guy that comes to mind for me, just because with Gronk, you know, out with the IR, he's just such a tremendous value at 6,600, even in a bad matchup, by the way. You know, I talked about this on the podcast yesterday, but given that the Patriots are so fluid in their approach, it's not like their plan is just going to come in here and charge 20 carries to LeGarrette Blount, regardless of how it's going. And Edelman represents for them a very tough-to-stop way to get very similar kind of production. And so I think he's going to get like 10 receptions this game. I think it'll be his best game of the season in terms of overall catches. What he does with those catches, you know, it's kind of anybody's guess. But yeah, I really, really like him this week. And if he were a main slate player, I would consider him there too.
All right, I think that's it for us today, breaking down every game on the week 14 NFL slate. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com. You can go over to the site, grab a free 3-day trial to the projection system that's informing basically everything that we discussed here today, how we put our lineups together, how we sort of evaluate value on a week-to-week basis. That's a free trial for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. That includes our NBA projections as well. And you try it for 3 days, $29.95. You're all good to go. And buddy, I'll talk to you again early next week when we are counting all of our winnings from being so great at DFS.
I'll be there and be square.